Welcome to a special edition of Workforce Central Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the National Association of Workforce Boards, in a session live from NAWB Forum 2015. I'm Ron Painter. I was happy to be joined by Martin Simon from the National Governors Association as we sat down recently after Delaware Governor Jack Markell spoke to the full forum crowd. Martin and I had an opportunity to sit down and ask him a few questions, and that's what you're about to listen to. We're pleased to bring it to you, and we want to thank the governor for his joining us at NAWB Forum 2015.
Good afternoon. Our thanks to those of us, those of you who are joining us live. We're, with the governor's permission, we've also are going to record the conversation with the governor, so we'll put it up later. My name is Ron Painter, and I'm the CEO for the National Association of Workforce Boards. And it's really my pleasure in this conversation with the governor to be joined by Martin Simon, who is the Director of Workforce Development Programs for the National Governors Association, and no stranger to the governor. Martin and I are part of what's called the Intergovernmental Organizations, and we have been working together, a lot of conversation on the Innovation and Opportunity Act as it has made its way through Congress, and now as we're looking toward implementation. Governor Markell, again, thanks for taking time and staying with us and talking to Martin. I'm going to let Martin toss the first question over to you, Governor.
Okay. Well, first, Ron, thank you for this opportunity. I think part of what we're going to demonstrate is it's very important for both states and locals to be working together in partnership as we move forward with implementing the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. Governor, I had the pleasure and opportunity to work with you on your chair's initiative, Better Bottom Line for People with Disabilities, that you talked about in your remarks earlier. And you referenced that the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act puts much stronger emphasis on serving individuals with disabilities and working with employers to provide both work-based learning opportunities and competitive employment. From your work with a lot of companies and speaking to a lot of companies, both before you took on this initiative as chair and during that initiative, what are some of your insights that you could share with the states and locals as they move forward to implement this new focus on people with disabilities?
Okay. Thank you, Martin. Ron, thank you as well. Are you good? If I don't use my microphone, are you going to be okay? And you're okay. All right. So there are four main things that I want to point out. The first is it's really important that employing people with disabilities is not seen as a one-off responsibility, but it's really got to be integrated into the overall workforce development efforts. And what that means is you shouldn't really approach it as the vocational rehab people going to an employer and saying, can you please do me a favor and find jobs for these people? A much better approach is if it's connected with the overall workforce development responsibilities. And so somebody from the Department of Labor really gains a pretty in-depth understanding of the recruitment needs of an employer and goes to that employer and says, I want to understand your business. I want to understand the skills and abilities that you're looking for. And I represent a whole range of people. Some of them have traditional abilities, some of them don't. But they all have abilities, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we find people who meet your needs. Everybody understand? So that's number one. Number two, the business, the connection to the business piece of it's critical in the sense that it's a lot more powerful when employers are hearing from each other about why they employ people with disabilities as opposed to only hearing about it from governors or secretaries of labor or workforce development people and the like. And so when the CEO of Walgreens said to the CEOs of OfficeMax and Lowe's and a bunch of other UPS, a bunch of other companies at a meeting that I attended, when he said, we employ people with disabilities, not because it's charity, but because it's in the best interest of our shareholders, that is a whole lot more powerful. And I think it's really important that you look for opportunities and you look for champions in your business community who understand how valuable it is and who will make that pitch. That's the second thing. The third thing is that state governments have to lead by example. You can't go off and tell business people why they have to hire, employ people with disabilities, unless you as a state government are walking the walk. So that's number three. And number four is, and I mentioned this briefly in my remarks, but it's really important, the preparation that we do in with our young people while they're still in school and leading them with the idea that there's an expectation that you ought to expect that you're going to work. Like when you get out of school, you're going to work like for the rest of your life, as opposed to an expectation that we're going to, when you turn 14, here's how you sign up for public benefits. And the earlier that's their mindset, the better. And the earlier that you get them into the workforce, where they actually get on the job and they see what's expected of them, not just in terms of the work, but all of these social skills and everything else, the soft skills that goes along with it, critically important. So those are really the four major insights that I gleaned from our work. Integrate with workforce development efforts. The business community is key. Lead by example and do a good job in terms of setting expectations from the beginning.
So I'm gonna ask a question, I guess, both as the governor of Delaware, but as a governor. We really do appreciate you joining us. Not always sure, I won't prejudice by saying not always sure that their answers have come from Washington, but states still get hit with issues. A lot of conversation now about the middle class, a lot of conversation about what's happening, how are people faring. What kind of approaches do you see governors talking about? What kind of approaches do you see states taking in regard to, I guess, middle jobs, middle income work?
So, first of all, I think it's really important that you understand the context of why so many people are facing challenges in this economy. And I mentioned this in my remarks, but I think it's worth mentioning again. There are like these really big forces at work, and when you combine the fact that the supply of workers is a lot bigger than it used to be, because jobs in 30 years ago that by default would have gone to the U.S. or Canada or Western Europe or Australia or maybe Japan, employers now literally have choices of dozens of countries all over the world because there's a skilled workforce. So major force number one is the fact that there are a whole lot more workers available around the world. And employers have more choices than ever before. And fact number two is that because of these really powerful computers we all carry around with us, there is less need for people. I mean, you're in the business of connecting people into the workforce. I mean, just think about it. These numbers are not exactly right, but think of like Kodak then and Facebook today. So Kodak then, had 145,000 employees and had a market capitalization of like $30 billion. And each employee generated about $200,000 in sales. Today, Facebook has, 20,000 employees and a stock market valuation that's got to be a couple hundred billion. And each employee generates over $1 million. So that's like, the old companies versus the new companies. But even if you think about the old companies then versus the old companies today, most of them are producing twice as much stuff with half as many people. The reason I go into all that before I sort of give the direct answer to your question is because I think you have to understand the context of what's going on and how are you going to come up with smart policies if you don't understand what's going on. So, that being said, I think what you have to do is, you have to embrace the need for a skills revolution. And this is like part and parcel of what you all do. And it's got to start, frankly, I think, at the age of, it sounds ridiculous, but, you know, if the Federal Reserve Bank in Minnesota said the most effective economic development investment that a state can make is an early childhood education. So it starts early. I mean, it starts at early childhood education. It goes through K-12. It goes through the college piece. And I want to take a minute. I mean, I think we are doing really extraordinary work in Delaware around college access in the following way. There's a professor at Stanford. Her name is Caroline Hoxby. And what she has, one of her main areas of research is high-performing but low-income kids. And across the country, there are a lot of high-performing kids who come from low-income families who don't bother to apply to college, either because they come from a family where they think it's not within the realm of their experience, or they think they can't afford to pay for it. So we do something in Delaware that's different than other states. We, taxpayers, pay for every high school sophomore and junior to take the PSAT and the SAT during the school day. So the kids don't have to come up with the money themselves, and they don't have to come in on a weekend. So their participation rates are really high. So what this has allowed us to do is to identify like a lot of additional kids who could be, based on their SAT scores, successful in college, but who otherwise would never have applied. So we entered into a partnership with the College Board. They went out and they secured application fee waivers to up to 8 colleges for these kids. And then we have a really aggressive campaign where we have volunteers come in the fall working with kids in school on their common application, on their essays. We have volunteers coming in to work with families on the FAFSA forms. So the net effect is we've really increased. Like we're only in our second year. So last year was our first year. We had a goal. We called it getting to zero. We wanted every college-ready kid to apply to college. And everyone did. And everyone was admitted. And the overwhelming majority are attended. And our poster child is a young woman named Sydney Nye. She went to Mount Pleasant High School in Wilmington. And she, smart kid, didn't have any money. And she planned to apply to one college. And that was a college that didn't charge an application fee. Because for a lot of kids, that $100 application, that's like reason enough not to apply. Anyway, to make a long story short, she's now a freshman at Stanford. And, you know, not every kid's going to go to Stanford. But in Delaware, it's 250 additional kids. We went from 82% to 100% of the college-ready kids who actually applied to college. So we're very excited about that work. But we also know that college is not for everybody. Four years, certainly not for everybody. So we just celebrated the 10th anniversary in Delaware. If you have a 2.5 GPA in high school and you've stayed out of trouble, you can go to college for free. You can get your two-year degree for free, other than the cost of books. And then a lot of our students, they'll finish their two-year degree, and then we have 180 different articulation agreements between our community college and four-year degrees. So these kids go from getting their two-year degree paid for, they start as a junior. And then they all have to pay for their junior and senior years. So that's really exciting. And then we're doing a ton of stuff for students who may want to go right into the workforce. And it's really important that we connect them to opportunities while they're still in school to see what the world of work is all about. So anyway, that's sort of the whole skills revolution piece. There's a whole piece around engaging with the world. I mean, you talk about creating jobs, you know, our share of GDP represented by exports is about half of the rest of the world's. So we have such low-hanging fruit in terms of helping our businesses export more, and so I think there are a whole bunch of strategies around there. And then the last thing that I would say is I think that there's a real problem with economic insecurity holding back the economy. Because if people are economically insecure, it's less likely that they're going to be going out and taking risks and, you know, going applying for a new job or starting a business or, for that matter, spending. And so I think there are a whole number of strategies ranging from, you know, I think a decent minimum wage is important, but it certainly doesn't stop there. I think it's, you know, frankly, it's things like investing in substance abuse treatment. It's about financial empowerment. So we're now probably in about year 4 of a program in Delaware that I'm very excited about. It's called Stand By Me. And this is a partnership. Basically, we've gone out and we've We started by going to employers, generally of people who don't make very much money. So think a hotel or a grocery store. And these employers have a lot of employees who don't show up, who run into problems in their own life, and as a result, they have a high level of turnover, a high level of absenteeism. It's really expensive to continue to train new employees. So what we've done is we've embedded financial coaches at the workplace. And the financial, these are not like certified financial analysts, they're not stockbrokers, but they're basically financial therapists.
And when you say we, is this something the state is funding?
The state, no. Very little of it is state funding. Most of it, we've gone out and we've raised money from foundations. And then the employers kick in too, because the employers recognize that they have a lot to gain because they have a lot less turnover. And the people, if they feel more confident that they can deal with crises as they come down the road, they're going to be better employees. So I think, and there's a whole series of strategies around that as well.
You've already described some of the partnerships. Partnerships has been kind of the mantra at this conference. The panel of federal deputies from the Department of Labor just talked about partnerships in almost every session I've attended. When you and Ron and I were sitting down before you made your remarks, you were talking about a couple of partnerships that you were particularly proud of, and you kind of baited the audience with talking about them here. So you want to talk about those?
So I'll mention two of them. So one is, I'll mention three of them. The first one I'm going to mention is because Ken Smith is sitting in the back of the room. Ken is the chair of Jobs for America's Graduates, which is it's the organization I mentioned in my remarks. It's phenomenal. I won't repeat everything, but it's phenomenal. And so we have recently entered into a partnership. This is under the general heading of how do you accelerate the time frame to get somebody trained for a job, and how do you get people trained who in the past would not have had the opportunity. So this one I'm going to mention is around healthcare. So there's a partnership that is about to launch, which is a three-way partnership between, actually like a four-way partnership. McKinsey, the big management consulting firm, has a not-for-profit like foundation, which has launched this thing called Generation. They're launching it around the world, and they're launching it in the States. They started in Pittsburgh. I think Delaware will be the second or third place, and they're doing healthcare. And so the idea is there are a ton of jobs in healthcare where you don't need like a big advanced degree, CNA or lots of things. And so McKinsey came up with the big idea. These students who come out of Jobs for Delaware graduates, and these are, as I said earlier, these were the kids who were the most at risk of dropping out of high school. But they finished thanks to this incredible program. But they're going to be the workforce. And then we've gone out and we found employers in the healthcare industry who have said, okay, we're going to give opportunity to these young people who have been trained according to the McKinsey rubric by Delaware Tech, our community college. We're going to give them, it's a two-month training. They're going to get like paid some half wage, I think, while they're studying. Then they're going to come on as apprentices for a couple months where they're going to be able to prove themselves. And when they prove themselves, we're going to hire them. So that's partnership number one. Partnership number two, different end of the spectrum, financial services. We have a lot of financial services employers in Delaware, and a lot of those jobs are in the information technology industry. Well, if you talk to the financial services employers and you ask them, what is your recruitment strategy? Oftentimes what they say is, we recruit away from each other. That's a lousy recruitment strategy. And yeah, we poach from each other. They recognize what's going on. So we've got all of them at the table to develop a better approach, which means developing a different pipeline of people who will be skilled in that field. And the cooperation has been amazing. And so I expect, for example, this fall, not we, the government, but we sort of collectively are going to launch a new coding school, computer programming school, where instead of needing a four-year degree or a two-year degree, people are going to go for, let's say, 16 weeks. And we've done a nice job of understanding at a very granular level what specific coding skills our employers are looking for, and that's what's going to be taught. So we're excited about that. Third partnership, aviation. I mean, you're talking, I mean, healthcare, financial services, aviation. People don't really think of Delaware as a big aviation hub. We have 1,000 jobs in companies like the SoFalcon, Hawker Beechcraft, and Pass Aircraft, and Summit Aviation. And a lot of those jobs, people will like gut an old aircraft and then install the latest systems. Well, I mean, they can't find enough people who were trained in power plant and airframe maintenance. So the Department of Labor pulls together the employers on one side of the table, our community college on the other side of the table. They have a very specific conversation about what's needed. And then they, you know, we're doubling the size. It's still not big enough, but we're doubling the size of that program so more people turn out. So those are some examples. And then I mentioned in some detail the program with for the young people with autism, which we're very excited about. And Jennifer Mizrahi from Respectability is here. I mentioned her group as well. And there is no way that we can make progress unless the employers are actively engaged. And a few of you missed that. That was really the first question. I'll say what I said before, and I mean this with every fiber of my being. When I say to employers, you ought to be employing people with disability, it's not because you ought to be charitable. It's because if you actually give them a chance, you are going to find that it's actually in the best interest of your shareholders. And then, by the way, that's not just my perspective. That's like the CEO of Walgreens. That's what he believes, because he's proven.
I think that's an important point as both states and locals try to work with business and try to convince them that it's important to hire people with disabilities, that it's, as you said, it's not being charitable, it's actually benefiting your bottom line. I have a follow-on question. I was sitting next to someone when you were making your remarks, and they were saying, there's great things going on in Delaware, but Delaware's a small city. Is this scalable? Can you take this to New York, or the person was in the room, I pointed them, made this comment, but I think it's an important question.
It's absolutely, anybody here from Wisconsin or Iowa or South Dakota? I mean, it is happening in those states for sure. It is absolutely scalable. I mean, all it takes is a willingness for everybody to sit down together. So I just, you start with one person. And you've got networks in your states. I mean, you have your workforce investment board. You got your chambers of commerce. You got your institutions of higher education. You got the people engaged in preparing young people with disabilities. I mean, this is not rocket science. Trust me. If it were, I wouldn't have been capable of doing it. But we did produce a. It's the same thing. Jobs for Delaware. Jobs for America's graduates started in Delaware. Like 35 years ago, under a Republican governor. In fact, Vice President Mondale at the time called the then Republican governor to say, I'm not really in the business of helping Republican governors with their efforts, but what I've heard about what you're doing for Jobs for Delaware graduates sounds pretty important. You're preventing high school dropouts. We ought to replicate. And so, and then everybody, the naysayers said, well, Delaware's a really small state. This couldn't work elsewhere. Well, I mean, you can go, I mean, it's now like 32 states across the country. We just celebrated a couple months ago our 1 million students. It's absolutely, this stuff is replicable if you want it to be.
Governor, let me ask that question, maybe a little more macro question. Part of what, as Martin mentioned, we talk a lot about partnerships. We work with a lot of the nation's local business-led workforce boards. You represent the state level. We know from talking to our local elected officials the amount of conversation the workforce gets when they sit down with business, particularly when they sit down with business that wants to expand or is thinking about moving into their territory. How critical is this question now for you as a governor? How quickly in the process of a company talking to you about Delaware does this come up?
Well, there's a reason that I, am basically spending my whole day between getting down here and being here and going back, because it is the most important thing. I have visited probably 1,500 businesses since I became governor. I'm in my seventh year. And I call them my customer calls. And I ask one question, which is, what can I do as the governor to facilitate your success? The number of people who have said something about lowering taxes, less than the fingers on my hand. The thing that always comes up, the number of people who say do something about regulations, maybe 50 times out of 1,500. The number of people who talk about quality of the workforce, quality of the schools, it's literally, higher than 95%. The problem is that you can't get anybody at a national level in terms of the media or politics to focus on. We were talking earlier, the president just hosted an event a couple of weeks ago. It's basically this initiative I was telling you about with having all the financial services employers at the table for the IT industry. There's actually a national initiative. It's called Tech Hire. The president announced it a few weeks ago. You probably didn't read anything about it. It's not sexy. But in terms of actually making a difference in the lives of the people that we're all elected to, that some of us are elected to serve, some of us at businesses and, workforce, investment force, whatever, the reason we come to work, I think there's a bigger payoff here, whether it's just like a regular person looking to move up, whether it's somebody with a disability, whether it is a young person who, otherwise would have dropped out of high school. This is the holy grail. And it's amazing, over the last year, there have been a handful of articles about, like, Switzerland. I think a lot of people would say Switzerland does a better job of providing these apprenticeship opportunities for young people than anybody else. And so there have been some articles about that. And then there's some articles about models in this country. The articles and the models about this country are like, there's a five-person example here, and there's a six-person example there. Nobody's really taking it to scale. And I'm not saying it's easy. I don't think it is easy, but I think we've got to figure this out. I'm going to give it a message.
I was going to say, we have time for one more quick question, Martin.
Well, I'll make it quick. You talked about your initiative as chair of Better Bottom Line for Black People with Disabilities. Current chair of NGA, Governor Hinkle from Colorado, title is Delivering Results, and it focuses on a big part of it's on data. You talked about data in your remarks and the importance of it. So what are the key policy questions around the labor market that you need data to answer as a governor?
Well, there's the obvious, like how many people are employed. I pay a lot more attention to job growth than I do to unemployment. Because I think the way unemployment's calculated is to sort of, you can look like you're doing great just because people are dropping out and looking for a job. So it's sort of a ridiculous figure. It's the one that everybody pays attention to. So therefore I do. But it's a whole lot better, as we've seen in Delaware. Last couple of years, we've created a lot of jobs. And for a while, our unemployment rate was going up at the same time because more people were looking for jobs. That has now corrected itself and it revised the figures. We've created a lot of jobs and unemployment's down. So I think it's around that. It is around wages. But for me, there's some other stuff, which is, I get my best information by asking a lot of questions, like, how many jobs are you trying to fill and can you not find the skilled workforce anymore? And it doesn't take very long. In the IT arena, we have banks in Delaware, and Delaware, again, a small state, we have individual employers that have like hundreds of jobs that they want to fill. And like, how valuable is it to like figure out a way to get those jobs filled? And how great is it for the employer? Because, by the way, they could go to like dozens of countries around the world and find people with the skills. How great is it for them when they can find it locally? And how great is it for our constituents?
I appreciate the amount of time you've given us today, Governor Jack Markell of Delaware. Thank you very much.
I have a direct message for you, Maria Smith, down on Australia. I am here on behalf of
Nail him down.
I was just going to go catch up on work and talk to the United States.